only time I'm comfortable is when I'm on stage. When I'm on stage, I'm really comfortable and easy and in the moment of being on stage. But the minute I get off stage, I get really rageful and angry about the state of the world.
We just can't afford to keep these lies going. We can't afford to be stigmatizing and ostracizing same-sex loving people in our community because it's killing us. So hopefully Noah's Ark helps to change that.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Razor-thin margins mark U.S. marriage rights campaigns. Delaria jazzes it up and jokes around. And a TV series jumps the broom to the box office. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Donna Ann Ward.
And I'm Lee Moore.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 25th, 2008. LGBT advocates in the U.S. are in their final pushes to defeat anti-lesbi-gay ballot measures in four states on November 4th. In what is probably the most closely watched non-candidate battle in the general elections, Californians will consider Proposition 8, a measure to overturn the state Supreme Court ruling in support of same-gender marriages and constitutionally ban them. The latest polls suggest that the vote will be extremely close. In what may be the best of what some LGBT critics have called a weak TV advertising strategy, California State Superintendent of Public Instruction Jack O'Connell is featured in the latest No 1-8 ad, condemning as absolutely untrue and shameless charges by its proponents in their ads that young school children will be forced to learn about same-gender marriage if the measure isn't passed. The Prop 8 campaign continues to use scare tactics and lies to bolster their campaign, O'Connell says in the ad. It's despicable that children are being used for political gain.
Leaders of Yes on 8 this week sent letters to several businesses that have donated to the No campaign, threatening to publish their names and demanding that they make equal donations to ProtectMarriage.com, the umbrella group supporting the measure. Were you to elect not to donate comparably, the certified letters read, it would be a clear indication that you are in opposition to traditional marriage. Executive Director Jeffrey Kors of Equality California, which is spearheading the No on 8 effort, called it an outrageous attempt to extort people. None of the targeted businesses appear to be complying. In what some analysts say is the costliest social issue campaign in U.S. history, by some accounts the total spending by both sides has topped $50 million, the Yes on 8 campaign has been largely funded by the Roman Catholic-based fraternal organization Knights of Columbus, the notoriously anti-queer Focus on the Family, and thousands of Mormon church members. Californians Against Hate, a group formed to fight Proposition 8, claimed that, according to a September 20th report in the Wall Street Journal, Mormon church members have been told that their souls would be in jeopardy if they don't donate to the Yes campaign.
Voters in Arizona in 2006 made it the first and only state to defeat a proposal to outlaw same-gender marriage. 29 others had passed marriage bans by that time. But the ballot initiative 2 years ago would have also banned domestic partnerships, often preferred by senior citizen couples who could lose government benefits if they married or remarried. And that aspect is largely believed to have contributed to the measure's 4-point loss. But Proposition 102, a more narrow ballot initiative on this year's Arizona ballot, bans just same-gender marriage. According to Time magazine, its proponents have raised more than $7 million, seven times the amount raised in their 2006 loss, and 70 times the amount that opponents have raised. According to Californians Against Hate, Mormon church members have also largely bankrolled the Yes campaign in Arizona. In better news for opponents, the state's largest newspaper, the Arizona Republic, this week urged a no vote in its editorial pages. Public opinion polls show that, like California, the outcome in Arizona is too close to call.
According to the latest polls in Florida, voters favor a constitutional ban there by 57%. Constitutional amendments, however, require a supermajority in Florida of 60%. And in addition to outlawing same-gender marriage, Amendment 2 states that no other legal union that is treated as marriage or the substantial equivalent thereof shall be valid or recognized. Opponents say that would deny domestic partner benefits not only to same-gender couples but also to unmarried couples who live together. They're hoping that the state's significant senior citizen population and the fact that a 60% vote is required to pass the measure will work in their favor.
And a poll in Arkansas predicts that Act 1, which would prevent any unmarried couple from adopting or caring for a foster child, will lose. It requires a simple 50% vote to pass. According to the latest Arkansas poll, 55% oppose the measure, while 38% are in favor. Supporters say that Act 1 is needed to prevent gays and lesbians from adopting children in the state. But Jane Perry, the poll's director, said that, "It seems to me that many Arkansans, both liberals and conservatives, are uncomfortable dictating the family arrangements of others, whether they agree with them or not."
In other news from around the world, officials in Tambov, Russia, after giving initial approval, reversed course and banned the city's first ever public LGBT events, which had been scheduled for October 9th. City officials claimed that residents did not approve of such a march and rally, that police couldn't guarantee security, and that there would be traffic problems. Moscow gay activist Nikolai Alexeyev, who was involved in planning the events, said the reversal violates the Russian Constitution and the European Convention on Human Rights, and that organizers will take legal action against the city. Tambov is about 500 kilometers southeast of Moscow and has a population of about 292,000. Earlier this year, Mayor Oleg Petin reportedly said that faggots should be torn apart and their pieces thrown to the wind.
Officials in Krakow, Poland, also approved a lesbian gay march and then also banned it, after Polish President Lech Kaczynski announced plans to attend city independence celebrations on the same day. LGBT activists had planned a March of Rainbow Tolerance on October 31st to the grave of King Vladislaw III, whom some historians say was gay, on the anniversary of his birth, or death. There were conflicting reports about that. City officials were originally comfortable with the march and Independence Day events occurring simultaneously. But after Kaczynski's announcement, they banned all other street events and demonstrations for the day and said the king's grave would be closed. Kaczynski, who as mayor of Warsaw banned that city's 2004 and 2005 pride parades, has said that if homosexuality were to be promoted on a grand scale, the human race would disappear, and that he opposes propagating gay orientation. Gay activist Lukasz Paluki said of Kaczynski that, "Information about our meeting was in the biggest Polish media, so I am sure he knew about our march."
An Islamic body in Malaysia has banned lesbian sex and what it calls masculine conduct by female Muslims. The National Fatwa Council's chair Abdul Shakur Hussein told reporters that, "It is unacceptable to see women who love the male lifestyle, including dressing in the clothes men wear. It becomes clear when they start to have sex with someone of the same gender, that is woman and woman." The country of 27 million people is governed by two different judicial systems: Sharia courts to address Muslim civil matters and secular courts, which apply to the 40% minority in Malaysia who are not Muslim. Section 377 of the Malaysian Penal Code outlaws sodomy, punishable by up to 20 years in prison. Opposition leader Anwar Ibrahim has twice been charged with that crime, which he says was done to discredit him. The same law is still in force in other former British colonies, including India, where it's currently being challenged in the Delhi High Court, and in Singapore. Malaysia additionally punishes gross indecency with another male person with up to 2 years in prison. Cross-dressing is also illegal. LGBT advocates worry that the new fatwa may lead to a specific law in Malaysia making lesbian sex a crime.
But lesbians have apparently gained equal access to fertility treatment in Britain under legislation approved by an almost 3-to-1 margin in the House of Commons this week. According to a report by PinkNews.com, the Human Fertilization and Embryology Bill now returns to the House of Lords for a final reading before it becomes law. The legislation will make it easier for lesbians and single women to get National Health Service fertilization assistance and allow lesbian or gay couples to be named on birth certificates as the legal parents of their children.
And the head of the British Army, General Richard Danat, made history by addressing an LGBT conference in London earlier this month. In remarks to the fourth joint conference on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual matters, Dinant said that we have made real progress in our understanding of equality and diversity in the military context, and there is a desire to achieve more yet. Respect for others, he said, is not an optional extra. It is a command responsibility and an essential part of leadership, teamwork, and operational effectiveness. Britain's armed forces lifted their lesbi-gay ban in 2000, following a ruling by the European Court of Human Rights ordering the change.
And finally, Sweden's Court of Appeal has refused to hear a kennel owner's appeal of a discrimination case she lost after refusing to sell a puppy to a customer because she was in a lesbian relationship. The woman had mentioned her partner during a phone call to the kennel owner, asking about a puppy advertised for sale. The owner then refused to sell the puppy to her. The kennel owner must now pay 20,000 kroner, about $2,000, in damages. The Swedish Constitution bans discrimination based on sexual orientation. According to the English-language newspaper The Local, in her explanation for denying the woman her puppy, the kennel owner made reference to earlier contacts she'd had with transvestite couples, saying she'd read that transvestites are connected to animal pornography.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 25th, 2008. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap was written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. For This Way Out, I'm Donna Ann Ward.
And I'm Lee Moore.
Noah's story arc continues on the big screen later in the program. Notoriously open lesbian comic Lea Delaria became famous doing stand-up, then movies, then Broadway, then jazz. And now she's doing all of the above. In anticipation of her doing Australia, she chatted with This Way Out Brisbane correspondent John Frame about her performing life and about, of all people, Sarah Palin.
Color me a color, baby. Color me a color. Color me a color, darling. I know who you are. Come up off your color chart. I know where you're coming from.
Lea Delaria, welcome to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine.
Fantastic. Happy to be on. Thanks for having me.
It's wonderful to know that you're coming to visit Brisbane to be part of the Brisbane Jazz Festival.
I'm actually doing Sydney, Adelaide, Melbourne, and Brisbane. So four of the five big cities.
I first saw you in the film The Edge of 17. And Angie was really sweet. Do you find that you identify closely with Angie in that respect?
Not even remotely. That's why I'm laughing. So, my reputation is so completely and utterly different from that. You know, I'm like the bad girl lesbian comic, and Ellen is the good girl. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm down and dirty and grungy and so on. But the thing is, when I come to Brisbane, what'll be different is that it won't be comedy. It's going to be pure singing in support of my new record that's come out in the Warner Jazz label.
Mm-hmm. The Ballad of Sweeney Todd, released as a single, hey, from Play It Cool, and you really nail it.
Thank you. I mean, that particular, the Ballad of Sweeney Todd was kind of the whole reason that I got into the world of jazz. It was just something that I put together, and I went on stage at Carnegie Hall when they were doing this tribute to Stephen Sondheim, a jazz tribute to Stephen Sondheim, and I went and did that number, and stopped the show, and Stephen came backstage and had a nice long conversation with me, which was totally awesome.
Wow.
And then the A&R representative from Warner Brothers was behind him and said, let's give you a 4-record deal. It was amazing.
Okay.
Changed my life.
Uh-huh. But if you've had this other life as a comedian, as mm-hmm. you know, such a notorious, perhaps, stand-up comedian, does that then influence much of what an audience really expects when they turn up to your shows?
Not really, because, you know, what happened was I was a kind of stand-up comic that was loud and brash and in your face, you know what I mean? And people could only take about 5 minutes of it, and then they'd be like, Mommy, make it stop. It's too much. It's too loud. It's too fast. It's too, you know, wild. So what I always did was I would sing a song, after about 15 minutes, 10 minutes comedy, I would sing a song. I would sing a jazz song. I usually had a trio on stage with me or a quartet. And then I would, like, kind of lull the audience into this kind of false sense of security before I would start screaming at them again. So I was always a comic who sang. And after I got the lead in the On the Town on Broadway, the Broadway Revival, and then, of course, Rocky Horror Show in Chicago and the other shows that I've done on Broadway, I became more known as a singer. And so I've gone from being a stand-up who could sing to being a singer who's funny. So that was like 10 years ago when that happened. So most people, I think, are aware of the fact that my career has progressed.
Okay. Do you find that your working life is more demanding now that you're a vocalist first?
My working life is insane because I do still do stand up, especially now with the political climate in this country and Sarah Palin, honey, I cannot stop talking about her. And so I do the stand up, I do the singing, and I'm actually on an American soap opera right now called One Life to Live. So I'm doing a bunch of acting as well. So I'm constantly, when you are as edgy and as butch as I am and look the way that I look and say the things that I say, it's really hard to make a living doing one thing. So I do about five different things. And between them, I have a career.
Okay. Must make you feel sort of, you know, comfortable with life.
I'm going to have to say no on that because I'm so kind of over what's going on with queer people right now. And the only time I'm comfortable is when I'm on stage. When I'm on stage, I'm really comfortable and easy and in the moment of being on stage. But the minute I get off stage, I get really rageful and angry about the state of the world.
Okay. So what is it that's happening with queer people in particular that is getting you upset?
I think personally that queer people, that our quote-unquote movement, if we can call it that, has been usurped by a bunch of kind of rich white guys. They've taken us, they could talk about these issues that don't mean anything anymore. I mean, like, we're really focusing so hard on gay marriages. Don't get me wrong. I think that if a gay person wants to get married, they should go out and they should get married. And the minute somebody says, you can't get married because you're gay, I've got a problem with that. But I like to examine what it is about us that makes us feel the need to imitate straight people. Like, our relationships aren't good enough unless they are like theirs. I don't think anybody should get married.
Fair enough. Yeah, and there's enough, I know, young people who certainly absolutely agree with you. You were saying before that you're particularly concerned about Sarah Palin.
I mean, please. Who is this? Where did he find this woman? He was, like, so desperate to find a woman that he went. I mean, I don't know her. She might be a really nice person. My guess is she's not. But, you know, I don't. But that's the biggest issue. I don't know her. I have no idea who she is. She just popped up out of the blue. Where did he find her? Where did he find her? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And she's a gun-toting mama who is against all gay rights. This is how bad she is against gay rights. I got to tell you this. She told a joke in her acceptance speech when she accepted the VP nomination. Well, she told this joke, and the joke was, what's the difference between a soccer mom and a bulldog? And the punchline was lipstick.
Okay.
Well, I know that joke. And the joke is usually, what's the difference between a soccer mom and a bull dyke? And the answer is lipstick.
Okay.
So not only is she not going to allow us to get married, she won't even let us tell lesbian jokes. She's a bad thing. She has to go. And, you know, I just want to say to the gay people who are out there to please come to the show. When I talk between songs, I will be funny because I can't help it. It's just not a stand-up focused show. This is a jazz festival. And that's the beauty of being as out as I am, that I can do something as straight-laced and as mainstreamed as the Brisbane Jazz Festival, still be who I am, and still, you know, kick ass at that festival. So it'd be really great to have, like, all these queer people come and just to this really kind of mainstream event, you know, and just show who we are.
It's been an absolute pleasure chatting with you, Leah Delaria.
Excellent. Thank you very much. I cannot wait to see Brisbane.
This Way Out's John Frame in conversation with funny jazz singer Leah Delaria. Her new album is called The Live Smoke Sessions.
We've got good news, bad news, and good news about your favorite international LGBT radio program. The good news is that you can now hear free podcasts of This Way Out. To subscribe, log on to www.thiswayout.org.
The bad news is that we're still owed thousands of dollars from our former online outlet, and that puts This Way Out in serious financial jeopardy. Stations get the program from us for free. You can get the podcast for free. Producing and distributing the program, however, is not free. But the other good news is that This Way Out's unique on-the-scene reports covering the fight for same-gender marriage equality from the world's first legal weddings in the Netherlands are now available in a 2-CD collection called Altard States. This Way Out listener supporters can get this and other special programs by visiting our website. Please say, I do, at www.thiswayout.org.
Nearly 2 years after it filmed its last episode, the landmark Logo Network TV series Noah's Ark just hit the big screen with a bang that even blew out High School Musical 3 in one city. This Way Out, Steve Pride chatted with Daryl Noah Stevens about the series and the film. Oh, baby,
it's often said there aren't enough good gay roles in Hollywood. But don't tell that to actor Daryl Stevens. He played Angel, the erotic dance instructor, in another gay movie. Andrew, the sexy roomie of a male escort in Boy Culture, and the title character in the Logo series Noah's Ark, which has transitioned from television to the big screen, with Noah's Ark jumping the broom.
Hi, I'm Daryl Stevens from Noah's Ark Jumping the Broom.
And what is the film about? The
film's about Noah getting married. Noah from Noah's Ark, the TV series, goes to Martha's Vineyard with his lover and his three best friends and their respective partners, and he goes to get married.
What attracted you to Noah originally, besides being a struggling actor and hey, TV show?
That was it, really. No. I like Noah's emotional vulnerability. Black male actors don't often get to play characters who get to show emotion, and these guys are not shooting guns, they're not dealing drugs, they're living lives, very sort of domestic, easy, very middle-class lives with their lovers and their friends, and it was kind of an interesting twist on what black men are seen doing on television, so that was kind of exciting. And I think with shows like Queer as Folk and Will and Grace, the main character is the sort of everyman, the sort of Joe White guy, you know? And with this show, Patrick Ian Polk, the creator, didn't really want to give in to that whole idea that the main character needs to be the most bland character. He felt like gay culture had sort of turned on the so-called sissies of the community. And everyone in the gay community was trying to look like straight guys. For black men, it was trying to look like thugs. And for white guys, it was trying to look like Abercrombie jocks, you know. So I think he really wanted to turn that whole idea around and make the hero a so-called sissy and stop vilifying those gay men who are comfortable in their skin being themselves.
Even after playing gay in 2 movies and a TV series, you were initially very hesitant to talk about your own sexuality.
People really need to understand that actors have no obligation to anybody to tell anybody about their personal lives. And the fact that an actor takes on a role in a gay project does not mean that that opens his bedroom door to the world. That means that he's playing a role. Get over it.
So what do you say about the rumors that you're black?
Yeah, how about that one? Let's start with that big rumor. Yeah, when I finally decided to just let it be public, it wasn't because of feeling any pressure about being black, no, about my sexuality being a big secret. It was because I just was tired of talking around the issue, and people brought it up in every single interview. I've been very comfortable with myself for a long, long time, so having to talk around the issue was exhausting and sort of, it just felt stupid. And at this point, I feel like once I did an interview for Instinct magazine, I was in the Out 100 last year, 2007. I don't need to talk about it anymore. It's done. There's the information. There you go.
You're onto your family?
Since I was 18. No one had any questions. It wasn't a big secret to anyone in my family.
What do you want audiences to take away from the film?
What's great about the film, to me, is that it highlights this big gay wedding is not dramatic for any of the reasons that the right wing wants to make it dramatic. It's not about weird sex or whatever. I still don't know what they're caught up on. I don't know what this Proposition 8 is even about. It's about these friends who get together with their friend who's making the decision to commit himself to his lover for the rest of his life. And all the drama that comes up is about their relationships, their very human relationships. And it feels silly to even say at this point, but it humanizes gay marriage. Of course it's human, but at this point it feels like people still don't understand. They're just people getting married. They're people who are in love committing themselves. Why is it such a big deal for you to let somebody get married? So to an extent, I think, you know, we're preaching to the choir because fans of the show are obviously people who are cool with gay people being in love and expressing that love. But hopefully there's enough of a buzz around the film that people who were not necessarily fans of the show and were not necessarily super pro-gay at the beginning of the day will go see the movie. And hopefully their eyes will be opened about the fact that gay people are people and they deserve the rights that you have. And, you know, what I think is also important about this particular story and these particular guys is they're living their lives very openly. There's a lot of talk about HIV and AIDS on the show, and there's one of the characters, Alex, played by Rodney Chester. He has a clinic, an HIV AIDS clinic. And having characters like this on television and in films who are very open and honest about their lives and their sex lives hopefully encourages people in the Black community to allow themselves and people in their families to be open about their lives and their sex lives, so that this HIV epidemic that is ravaging not only the gay, the Black community, but also women in the Black community, because of all these secrets and lies that the Black church is encouraging Black same-sex loving people to tell. They want Black people to stay in the closet, and it's not serving the Black community for Black gay people to stay in the closet. And I think having a story with these Black men expressing their love openly, without shame, without, and having their families come and support them as well, I think that's a big step. I think it's really important right now for people to see that, because we just can't afford to keep these lies going. We can't afford to be stigmatizing and ostracizing same-sex loving people in our community, because it's killing us. So hopefully Noah's Ark helps to change that.
Well, do you guys think it's okay to stop using condoms after you're married?
That's tricky. I mean, I have all these young guys come sweeping through the clinic after they've only known the guy less than a week, talking about, I love him, I trust him, he does a lot of nice things for me. I'm like, trust him? Girl, you the one that's gonna be sitting at HIV clinic looking stupid.
But isn't it a lot more complicated when you're talking about a long-term relationship?
You and Trey still use condoms?
We did the first 5 years, but we got tested regularly. And do you guys know that we're going on year 11?
Wow.
You guys believe that? And he's never cheated.
Aww.
That you know of.
Well, what about you and Eddie?
Oh, we still use condoms. I think it's more hygienic.
Well, I guess we can hold off. Maybe we'll revisit our options after a few years of blissful monogamy.
This is my conversation with actor Daryl Stevens. Noah's Ark, Jumping the Broom is a Logo Features release. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
I've been trying to find a way to tell you what I really want to say, but I've been too afraid to open up and let you see the way I feel inside.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Donna Ann Ward, Lee Moore, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, John Frame, Sherry Lunn, and Steve Pride contributed program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is made possible by donations from our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, hear our podcasts, or subscribe to postal mail CDs or cassettes of our programs. To receive our weekly program email alerts, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For associate producer Lucia Chappella and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening. On 2UUU, now Renew South Wales, KMUD&E, Garberville and Eureka, California, WJSC, Johnson, Vermont, and more than 175 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.